Hello and welcome to the WTF1 podcast. I'm your host, James Coker, along with Ash Vandelay. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. Today, we are going to be talking about the first race of the 2025 Formula One calendar, and that was the Australian Grand Prix. And what a Grand Prix it was.
What a race. Am I glad that I stayed up for it? Yeah, I guess. The live reactions were fun.
I had a blast. I got to say, what a way to start off the calendar. It was so much fun. I'm gutted for a lot of the drivers who DNF, especially on their Formula One debut, but like, it was just so exciting. Rain is not just the ultimate equalizer. It's just like, you know, creates so much mischief. People are just getting into scrapes, just getting into, I don't know.
I guess I'm a grumpy Gus today. Which I feel like such a boomer of my thoughts, because you're like, oh, it's like, in our notes you wrote absolute cinema, it was chaos. And I was like, yeah, but if it wasn't for the rain, it'd just be an absolute normal, boring race. Like, it would have been fine. It would have been neutral. Like, the only reason it was a good race, quote unquote, is because of the chaos. And does that mean that we do have good racing without the rain? Like, could they have passed?
We do have good racing without the rain. I don't think necessarily at Albert Park, because you look at the race the prior year, there were only like 24 overtakes or something like that. Like Albert Park, that circuit, the way it's laid out, I just don't think there are a ton of opportunities to overtake. So you're not going to have a really great race. And a lot is going to come down to how the cars qualify and pit strategy, which like a lot of circuits. But the rain gave us, in my opinion, an absolute banger.
I would like to hear people's opinions on what they think a great race is. Like, is it battles everywhere? Is it hero moves? Or is it just like a classic? I mean, we'll get into everyone who did one of those during Albert Park, which is, I think, the rain definitely bought out. But I'd like to hear people's definition of like a great race. Like, what does that mean?
For sure.
That you feel satisfied after you watch a race and like, yeah, that was, I'm going to talk about this for a little bit.
I think for me, it's stakes. There does not have to be a ton of overtakes. But there needs to be stakes. There needs to be suspense. There needs to be the opportunity to see lead changes.
So you like a well-done race?
Yeah. You know. Not like my steak, though. Joke. I like my steak medium rare. Yeah.
Thank you. I was like, oh, no. This isn't going to go terribly well or great. So we started with a qualifying, which I did not watch because I went to bed. For qualifying.
That's okay. It was late for you. It was like 9 p.m. for me, I think, or 10. It was 10 p.m. for me.
One of the few times the West Coast of the United States and just this side of the globe does it works out for you guys really nicely.
It's the best. I'm like, oh, what a time to be in California. I'm just playing Notorious B.I.G.'s I'm going back to Cali. No, not familiar with that one?
No, all right. Not.
Here we go. But I thought this race was absolute cinema. What a great way to start the season. Qualifying, we had both Haas's really struggling, both the quali and the race. Both Ali Bearman and Esteban Ocon were out in Q1, as well as Nico Hülkenberg, Liam Lawson, and Kimi Antonelli. Lawson, I think, was on a decent lap at the end of Q1, but then went off into the grass, decided to turn his Red Bull into a John Deere riding lawnmower, which was unfortunate. But then we had Bortoleto into Q2 with a kick / stake / Sauber / Audi, which I thought was very impressive, out qualifying a very experienced teammate in Nico Hülkenberg. We also had Jack Doohan in Q2 at his home race, which was great. Hadjer, both Aston Martins, Bortoleto and Doohan were eliminated in Q2. And then Q3, we had some surprises, with both Williams making appearances. You couldn't have asked for a better start for James Vowles and Williams, having both Carlos Sainz Jr. and Alex Albon in Q3, which was just a real treat, because I'm rooting for them right now. They're the lovable loser of Formula One right now. They're like the Chicago Cubs before they broke the Billy Goat curse. They're the Boston Red Sox before they
do not broke compare the them to the Boston curse. Red Sox. First of all, the Red Sox don't need any boys. All right. And they've never had that big of issues. Relax. Simmer down. I also was like, calling them lovable losers is such like an intense. Like, why are we calling them that?
What? They're the Chicago Cubs of Formula One right now.
Not right now.
Well, no. They're the Chicago. Before the Chicago Cubs broke the Billy Goat curse. They're the Chicago Cubs. Okay.
I'll let it go.
All right, whatever. Were you surprised to see anything in qualifying?
The qualifying I didn't watch?
Yeah. But you saw the results.
I did see the results. I was honestly surprised to see Williams comparatively to what happened. I mean, last year, how they were doing, especially Alex and stuff like that. So it's a nice surprise to see them up there, which kind of, I'm starting to build this narrative in my head, looking for patterns, things like that. Remember, we told Carlos Sainz going into Williams being super interested in the development, him leading the team in that development, saying what they should be doing, working all together. Williams is starting to build up again. So all that combination showing this in Australia is kind of nice. So, and we also saw that, we'll talk about it later, Carlos Sainz kind of being a strategist there for Alex working out during the race. So Carlos Sainz is putting his fingerprint on this team, which is sick to see.
What a team player. I love it. But then at the end of Q3, we ended up having a front row lockout for McLaren, which I think was kind of expected given their form and the expectations going into the season. Max Verstappen, P3, George Russell, P4. Yuki Tsunoda with a surprising P5 in quali. He must have been having like an I told you so mentality, especially since Lawson didn't even make it into Q2.
Yeah, I don't think Yuki's thinking like that.
No?
I just you just can't compare like that either. Lawson's supposedly never been on this track before is what I kept hearing.
Yeah.
And then Yuki's had plenty of experience, and Yuki does well. He's qualified greatly.
But would you not say that the Red Bull is a superior car to what Visa Cash App Racing Bulls is driving?
Yeah, but if you don't know what you're doing, you don't know where you're going. Of course, Lawson wasn't going to do well at the same exact time. Like, I just don't, like, what do people expect? I feel like I understand what people are saying with this whole Yuki thing. I think we need to take our heads out of our parasocial asses and, like, simmer down. Because, like, the Lawson agenda is so intense.
I love keeping my head in my parasocial ass, though. It's a comfortable place to be.
Yeah, you and everyone else who's, like, obsessed with someone and won't let it go. I've seen, okay.
While I'm not obsessed with anybody. You take that back, you all take right? I'm obsessed with one person, and that's me. I'm a narcissist.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of people with Carlos Sainz doing well, saying how Ferrari should be apologizing, groveling at his feet. Someone wished, and there was a whole manifesto against Liam Lawson that I saw that they had to delete because they wished life-ending situations to occur.
That's not cool.
That is absolutely not cool. It is, I don't know if you felt this way, James, specifically with this year. I don't know what it is. Maybe I keep getting this on my social media feeds because they think people are reacting and they just want these hot takes. It's just become so much more hostile about everything. And I was like, where are we having the discussions here? You don't have to love Liam Lawson, but we shouldn't be also doing the other extreme here. And it's like, this whole Yuki Lawson thing, this is not, go yell at Red Bull, okay? Like, what are we doing here?
I will say that I watched the race and then spent most of my time oscillating between the race, my grid rival chat, and Threads. Mm-hmm. And Threads for this race was very fun to follow. It was very fun to follow along the race on Threads. It was more positive than Twitter ever has been.
Yeah, Twitter was rough. Reddit is Reddit. That requires no introduction. Threads is actually surprisingly positive. I wrote something nice about Lando and I didn't get called names.
Yeah.
It's weird. People really take things out of context. I think it depends what social media, what your algorithm is and stuff like that. I don't know what that says about me on Twitter because I'm just like, please leave me alone. Blue Sky has been nice as well.
Is Blue Sky active in for Formula One community?
It's getting there. It's not as much as Twitter, but I think, we're the ones who have to start that.
Sure.
So if you're thinking about going to Blue Sky to talk about Formula One, now is your chance because there's not a lot of people doing that, given race by race and stuff. But yeah, but Twitter was rough, especially with the incidents with Behrman and the rookies and things throughout the race. It was kind of it was crazy.
Yeah. Rounding out qualifying, we had Alex Albon in P6 and Ferrari with a fourth row lockout. That has to be disappointing for Charles Leclerc and Lewis Hamilton. There were rumblings that I saw on Instagram that they were running their rain or wet weather setup in quali. I don't know if that was actual news or whether a rumor that someone started, but I didn't take the effort to actually do research on it because I'm lazy. Do you know anything about this?
So you're putting the burden of fact checking on me live while we're doing this podcast?
100%. You just like seem to always be in the know. You have your finger on the pulse.
F1 technical. People are saying it is a wet setup. Fred effectively confirmed it, but more worrying thing is that they would make them really good in Sector 3, and they were awful in it. It seems like I didn't hear anything from an official source or see anything like that. F1 technical subreddit seems to think that it was a wet setup.
Got it.
There's a lot more worrying things than their setup, which we'll get to when we talk
sure,
about
the yeah. Yeah, cough strategy, cough radio etiquette, this, that, or the third.
This is just added on, another needle in the haystack as it keeps growing throughout the decades of Ferrari stuff.
Cool, but let's get to the race, shall we? We had a pit lane start for Ollie Bearman and Liam Lawson. Anyone who DNF'd or DNS'd in this race can quote my favorite Milli Vanilli song and blame it on the rain. Yeah. Blame it on the stars that shine so bright. And whatever you do, don't put the blame on you. Just blame it on the rain. Do you know the song?
No.
Oh, I was hoping you'd join in.
I don't know how old do you think I am?
I don't know. Classic Milli Vanilli song. But Milli Vanilli's timeless. I feel like they transcend... They transcend generations. But as we all know, it was pouring rain just hours before the race at Albert Park in Melbourne. We had every car starting on inters or intermediate wet weather tires, with the exception of Lance Stroll, who started on full wets. We then, of course, had Isaac Hadjer on his F1 debut crashing out into the wall in the formation lap. I don't know how you felt, but I was pretty devastated for the kid, especially you see someone who's dedicated their whole life to making it to this point and not even getting to start the race. Like, it has to be incredibly gutting. We saw him crying in his helmet. You were watching it live. Like, what was your reaction when you saw that, like, in his first race ever, he didn't even get to start?
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned his emotions. He was crying in the helmet. You can tell he was devastated, just head down, hands, like, in the, you know, visor slot. Yeah, I've been saying this a little bit. Imagine you have millions of people watching you on your first day of work, and watching you have the worst day of your life on your first day of work, in addition to your employer, your potential future employers, all watching you do this. I would also be very emotional.
I would too.
And upset. So, yeah, understandably, I get it. I also understand people are saying that Helmut Marko was correct in saying that it was embarrassing, and I find that insane, and I get it. F1 is a tough as shit sport. We got 1,000 other people waiting in the wings to prove that they can take your car to P1. We can have some sympathy. Just like a little bit, not even sympathy, empathy.
Yes.
For like, if he keeps doing this, then it's like, okay, we need to have this conversation.
Right.
He has not shown this anywhere else. Like, we need to simmer down. Like, this is insane. The amount of vitriol I'm seeing about Hadjar's emotions and then Helmut Marko's comments. It's just like, well, I mean, Helmut Marko deserves the vitriol. It's the ones agreeing with him that I think is crazy.
For those of you listening that aren't familiar with this, Helmut Marko said it, to some degree, I'm paraphrasing, that it was embarrassing that Isaac Hadjar cried in response to him crashing out. And in my personal opinion, Helmut Marko can fuck all the way off for making a comment like that, because like do you not have any decency? Do you not have like any emotion? Is there just like no soul underneath that wrinkly skin? Like, what's going on here?
Dude, I can't even type a sentence when someone's looking over my shoulder at work in the office. All of a sudden, I'm just like, I don't know. Like, can you imagine millions of people watching you in your race car? It's just like, absolutely not. So, you know, give him, like, it happens. Give him a race. Move on through. We never said he was, like, for Kimi Antonelli, for example, if he did a lot of that, I would kind of understand where the, you know, hardness comes from, considering Toto Wolff is like, oh, he's the best, blah, blah, blah. I think Isaac has been properly hyped. Stuff happens, and then, I mean, he's not the only one to have done this later on, as we see in the race. So, he should also feel a little bit better.
Six.
But someone we have to obviously shout out is Anthony Hamilton, who came to console him when he was walking through the paddock back to the V-carb stuff. So I thought that was really sweet. And that moment, it was like a father to someone's son, right? It was a father being like, hey, I know what you're doing. I just like thought about my dad too in this moment, like how he always like helps and consoles, and I knew he'd do that for a friend too. So it was really sweet and wholesome to see Anthony being like, keep your head up.
If you didn't get a chance to see it, pretty soon after Isaac Hadjar crashed out on the formation lap and he was walking back to the paddock, Anthony Hamilton, Lewis Hamilton's father, sought him out and consoled him. And I thought it was just like such a class act, and I'm going to tear up like talking about this, but yeah. I just like, it reminds you in a world that's like very harsh and cutthroat that like there is good in the world and there are people that care. And, it was just a really nice, powerful moment. And I think it was also a reminder that it's okay to cry and it's okay to be emotional and it's okay to care. And I hope more people follow Anthony Hamilton's example in showing that kind of compassion towards people.
Yeah, we get the option to watch from our TVs on our couches in the comfort of home and cry in private, but these athletes do not.
Yeah.
So it's really awesome to see Anthony Hamilton just console him, as I mean any father would. And I mean, you're a dad. I think you understood in that moment. You're like, that's a father too, to a kid who just wants to make sure he's okay. So
100%. We then had a delayed race start, and then of course we had Jack Doohan crashing on the first lap, victim to the painted white lines on the track at Albert Park. Lap of grip there seemed to be causing problems for a lot of the drivers. Then of course we lost Carlos Sainz late in the race, Fernando Alonso, and then eventually Liam Lawson and Bortoleto also crashed out and did not finish. So we had one DNS, five DNFs, and a partridge in a pear tree.
But yeah, Carlos Sainz was interesting. He mentioned it was a torque surge in like the upshift.
Yeah, they had they said it was potentially an issue with the engine mapping, which I don't understand that. Maybe you can elaborate on it, but no.
His website, they didn't go any further than what they've mentioned a couple times of the surge, et cetera. And they said they've looked at the data. They understand what's going on his website. He mentioned it too. So post-race wise, I guess they just have to double check everything's okay with the car. We know the car can go far, a la Alex. So.
But it seems like it was not due to driver error. It had something to do with...
Well, TBD. I don't know what settings he was... I don't know how he was shifting aggressively or not aggressive. I don't know what Carlos Sainz was doing in the car. But it seems more so, right? It was something that the car did in response to something. And we'll see what that is.
Right.
So, yeah. And it must feel good for the rookies that Fernando Alonso, someone as a veteran as him, that is due to gravel. That is something we'll get towards a little too. And then Lawson and Bortoleto a little bit later when they were back on slicks, and then it had to go back to intermediate. So this is a little crazy.
Even if you think it's a bit overhyped, AI is suddenly everywhere, from customer service to Formula Auto racing. If it's not in your industry yet, it's coming fast. But AI needs a lot of speed and computing power. So how do you compete without costs spinning out? Time to race to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a blazing fast and secure platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, plus all your AI and machine learning workloads. OCI costs 50% less for compute and 80% less for networking. That's a lot of prize money. Thousands of businesses have already upgraded to OCI, including Vodafone, Thomson Reuters, and Suno AI. Right now, Oracle is offering to cut your current cloud bill in half if you move to OCI, for new U.S. customers with minimal financial commitment. Offer ends May 31st. See if your company qualifies for this special offer at oracle.com/WTF. That's oracle.com/WTF. We're not going to do lap by lap, but we do want to talk about sort of the basics of the race. Ash, you were up on the East Coast watching it, right?
Yeah, I was in my Snuggie. It's really cozy. You know what was really unfortunate? I knew this would happen. I was like, no, maybe they forgot about me. There's a great account on YouTube that takes a lot of the streamers who do live streams and just like puts all their reactions together. Oh. And I was thinking in my head, and I was like, oh, they're not going to put me in there with my comfy. They totally did. I'm in my pink comfy that's like furry, and I just had my hood on. I was not having it. I did not wear any makeup. I was like, it is 1 a.m. I'm just chill.
Were you streaming live?
Yes, I was live streaming, yeah. So then they... Wow. Put me in that contemplation of other streamers, which was...
Were you wearing like a mask, like a hydration mask as well?
Yeah, like my eye mask, the red light mask, just the whole thing. Like, I'm going to bed in 2 seconds. And I was like, oh man, I look like a doofus. But yeah, Lando Norris won the race from pole position with Max Verstappen P2 and George Russell P3. Apparently had a good race day crowd. 130,000 people came out to Albert Park, which was nice, even though despite of the weather. I'm not sure that much was happening. Not saying that much doesn't happen in that part of Australia. I'm just saying that the race is a big deal, and I'm sure a lot of people wanted to go after spending money on their tickets. So
yeah,
McLaren looked great. Qualified 1-2, as you mentioned earlier, and a lot of improvements to their tire degradation over the offseason. Helmut Marko says that's the thing that holds Red Bull Racing back. See, this is when we give Marko the microphone, not with other things.
Yeah.
In general, we shouldn't give him the microphone because how old is he? At this point, it's elderly abuse. Like, we don't know what he's saying anymore. So when Marko needs to talk about technical stuff, I understand. Car history, he's done a lot.
Sure.
We don't need him on his emotional journey here. But Helmut Marko says that tire degradation is the thing holding Red Bull Racing back. And you can see that on the first stage with the intermediate tires. McLaren thrived while Verstappen faced serious degradation and he fell off. We did get the first quote-unquote hold position of the year. Piastri radioed in. He said he's faster if he can pass, and they told him not to. And this has started the whole other thing on social media. That on his home race, how could you not let him try to race for the win? And it was a little slightly confusing because of how they kind of portrayed it. He radioed in. Meanwhile, Zach Brown's on the broadcast saying, yeah, they're allowed to race.
Yeah,
but they're being told to hold on the radio. But Zach Brown's telling you literally from the pit wall that they're allowed to race. So it was a little frustrating. And the reason for that was because they were passing back markers. And you're going to be like, Ashley, that's ridiculous. They can pass back markers and they can race each other. And I would say, sure, but McLaren would rather not risk that in the wet line that is there.
Yeah.
And make sure they come into a 1-2 in the podium in some way. They didn't know if it was going to be P1, P2, P1, P3, but they knew they can get both of them on the podium. And why risk going on racing on the wet line when you can just pass the back markers safely and securely and then to go race each other as you need to?
Also, it's really interesting, like, going into the race, the pre-race, and then also during, Zach Brown was just like on such a high. I don't know if you read it, if you clocked it at all, but man, that guy was in such a good mood. And there was a very funny exchange that happened on the grid before the race started, where Ruth Buscombe Divey was talking to Zach Brown on F1 TV with Laura Winter. And he goes, we're not going to tell you what tires we're starting on. And Ruth Buscombe goes, actually, I can see right there you're on the X-wets, which are like the full wets.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, well, you know more than you know more about what you're talking about than I do. And then I think they ended up switching to inners. But like, it was just a very funny moment.
I'm assuming he feels a lot better, too, after the race. Especially how well McLaren did strategy-wise, surprisingly. They really locked it in, and we'll get to that in a second. Of course, then when they were able to pass, they had the whole incident where both drivers went off the track into the gravel, which was a lot of gasp. And I don't know if they put a microphone into the crowd. There is no way the gasp was that loud. And I'm pretty sure they do this. I know they do this in other sporting events where they put a microphone in the crowd, just emphasize the and the claps and the cheers. Yeah. I'm pretty
also,
sure
they
did that
often pump way. Like it's like artificial crowd noise for the TV audiences too.
It's 100%. Because there's no, like, I understand people gasp. There's no way we heard that gasp that perfectly over the car engines of the as they went
it
off.
It sounded
the track.
Like a, it sounded like the live studio audience of a multicam sitcom.
Exactly. Then we just need the Wilhelm scream. Norris dived into the pits. He saved it. Piastri unfortunately beached it. But he didn't hear no bell, and he got himself out. And I was like, that's the Piastri I know. I love
still
that.
Still finished in the points, too. Like, that was very impressive.
This man, wildly aggressive good passes towards the end. He was going for it, and that was so good. I was like, oh, if you can just drive this all the time against your teammate. I hope he really enjoyed that little taste of it. And he's like, I'm going to do this in China. I'm done. Norris is done. I'm out for blood.
I don't know if I haven't scrolled all the way down to this outline. Have we talked about, or do you think that there is a curse in Australia for Australian drivers?
I guess.
We still have yet to see an Australian finish on the podium at the Australian Grand Prix, with the exception of 2014 when Daniel Ricciardo finished on the podium but was then disqualified. So with the exception of Valtteri Bottas, there has not been an Australian finish on the podium at the Australian Grand Prix. And I wonder, like, is there, similar to the Monaco curse with Leclerc, like, is there some juju in the air that's keeping Australians from having a good result at Albert Park?
Sorry, I'm such a Debbie Downer, but it's not a curse. It's just stats. It's just
but
the
it's
number
so
of Australian
much
drivers.
Fun to talk about curses and ghosts and ghouls and goblins.
What would the curse have, what would they have to do to break the curse is the real question.
I don't know, like eat like a bucket of Vegemite in a couple hours.
Bucket?
Like a bucket, like a 5-gallon bucket of Vegemite in one sitting. Then finally the ghost of Albert Park can be free.
give your first child to Albert Park or something like that.
Oh, no.
Just figure it out from there.
They all have to dress up like Paul Hogan from the movie Crocodile Dundee. That's how they break the curse.
The real question is, God, I always hate the ifs, right? Because the ifs never happened and we can just, sure. If my mother had wheels, she'd be a bike situation. But if Piastri did and was able to save it, and they did another beautiful double stack in the pits, mm-hmm. would have he been P2 or would have been overtaken Piastri? Because at that point, Verstappen was so close. Yeah. Piastri would have had to fend off Verstappen, and so therefore losing time to Norris. Or would he have passed Norris, and then Norris would have to fight off Verstappen? That's the real question.
I feel like Max was closing in. I feel like Max was going to pass him, but maybe that's just me.
Yeah, well, Max did pass Piastri on the race start.
Yeah.
Which was unfortunate. And again, we've given Lando Norris plenty of seasons to get to where he is. We can give Piastri the same thing. He's also constantly improving. And we saw that when after he spun out, got himself off the grass, that charged the P9, which was great. So hopefully he can just keep that momentum going to China.
Total. I know you said, you wrote here in the outline that you feel like Norris seems like much more level-headed this year. I also noticed that out of quali when he was mm-hmm. being interviewed post-quali. He just seems so much more composed this season already than he was towards the tail end of last season. Someone on Threads was like, you know, did he see a sports psychologist in the off season? Does he just have? Oh, that was that you? Okay, there you go.
Yeah, I was really in. I know this is just one race. Before everyone's just like, oh my god, what chills? This is. Yeah. I get it. We're looking for patterns. Sure. We're looking for one race. The fact that is that he broke the pattern that he usually mm-hmm. has this race. Yep. Now, will he go back to old habits in China, etc.? We will see. That only time will tell. First race out of 24. I get it. However, the breaking of the pattern is very interesting, right? I don't know if he saw a sports psychologist. I don't know what McLaren did, right? Last year, when he would do these interviews, he'd be so hard on himself.
Yeah.
And it was, for me, it was tough to watch. It was just, you know, it's usually be like, hey, I messed up. We can fix it. He was always like, yeah, that was terrible. He would just look down. He would look defeated. Sometimes just like a little bit quiet. And he'd really be in his head. And he would talk mm-hmm. about this too. He was pretty open because he does for Mind, the mental health charity, raises a lot of money for it. And I believe is a spokesperson for them. So he does talk a lot about his mental health and how, yeah, Formula One is tough and tough on him. And there were also a lot of things on the radio last year where they would ask him a lot of questions. I've talked about this a lot of yapping. He would ask questions and then they would ask questions back. And it would just be like, does anyone know what's going on? He's not confident in the decisions. Are they trying to get him confident? There's a lot of stuff going on. However, in this race, if you heard him on the radio, he always made the right call. He always said the correct thing. He's like, we need to pit. And they're like, no. And he's like, we need to pit. And they're like, okay, we checked. You need to pit now. And he's like, yeah. Fucking thought so. No, he didn't say that, but in my head I was like, okay, interesting. He actually made the right decisions. It was never a question. He never ended it in a question. He's like, we need to pit, you know, like we need to do this, we need to switch to inters, like it's gonna rain soon, like I'm telling mm-hmm. you what I see right now, it's a lot more wet than you think it is. I was like, okay, all right, we're taking charge here. Then after the race he said, I learned a lot from last year. I'm focused, I'm not relaxing, and I can take credit for not making mistakes. I did make only one mistake, and that was in turn 6, and then Max got in DRS range.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, man, if this man's locked in like this for the rest of the season, that's a championship run right there.
Yeah, we're going to have a great championship battle between him and Max.
Most question likely. Is if, right?
Yeah.
If this continues, and if he can just stay out of his own head. The issue is now that I'm having post-race, which I hate so much, and I'm like, no, Lando, you were so close, is him commenting towards people saying that it's the car, not him, or like, how much has the car helped you? Etc. etc. And he's talking a lot about that in his post race conferences. He's like, I can't believe people would say that. I've done a lot of work. The team is great. We work together well. Me mm-hmm. and Oscar did incredible drives. And I was like, okay, you've also had your previous comments about like Lewis Hamilton and his car and his run and Max Verstappen and things like that. I was like, all right, let's not let this get to your head. Just race your race.
Totally.
Just please, you were doing so well. This was besides of course that turn 6, the mistake and stuff like that, and them getting off on the slicks and stuff. It was honestly the closest to a perfect race I've ever seen from Lando Norris.
Yeah.
It was so good. And McLaren did an exceptional job. That double stack in the pits was sick.
It was sick. And it was just like such a hard race to like get right, I feel like, from a strategy standpoint, because The weather was coming in. Of course, you had everything on the radar, but like you had to make that decision on the exact right lap at the exact right moment to switch between wets and slicks.
Yeah.
And they got it perfect.
Yeah, they knocked it out of the park. It really worked out for them beautifully.
Next up, let's talk about the rookies. Let's just talk about how they did.
Yeah. So, I mean, you mentioned it. Isaac Hadjar crashed in the formation lap.
Yeah.
Unfortunate. I hate you, Helmut Marko. Jack Doohan? it's just like a cranky thing. It was just such like a... I grew up with Eastern European parents. I am the way I am because my mom always yelled at me if I came back with 100, which means I didn't ask the teacher for extra credit, even though there was an extra credit, but I should have asked.
I'm so sorry. That's exhausting.
But right, that's what it is. And yeah. A good leader praises in public, criticizes in private. His first race, maybe you should get back to the kid and talk about what went wrong instead of yapping your mouth to the press about how he's crying and it's embarrassing. Like, you're embarrassing. Yeah. Go fix this. Go talk to him and let's go over the data and talk about this. You're the head of the driver development program. Totally. Theoretically, this is your fault.
Yep.
You should have seen this line. Sorry, I'm so sassy about this Helmut Marko thing. It was just unnecessary. Such shitty leadership from someone who should be the head of the godfather of the development program, supposedly. Ugh.
No, I agree. I think at this point, he just knows where the bodies are buried and that's how he's still there.
Jack Doohan, before the race start, we talked about this. Bortoleto, something within the on lap 45.
Yeah, they said it had something to do with the suspension. It was not due to driver error. It had something to do with the car, right?
Yeah, it has something to do with the car. It just Liam Lawson, unfortunately, though, did spin out due to the weather, the rain.
I guess my question is, like, he didn't qualify well, and then he crashed. How soon until the media starts creating, like, a story saying, is Liam Lawson's seat in jeopardy when he's, like, only raced one race?
It's already there. It's always there in the back of your minds. And it depends. I also think Red Bull plants stories, like, a little bit. Well, teams in general. But Red Bull, like, as soon as you get an inkling of, like, a serious, you're like, oh, Red Bull's planting that because it's about to happen.
Yeah.
So let's see what he does in China. Let's see what he does in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
Kimi Antonelli, best finisher of the rookie bunch, coming home fourth. He didn't have the best qualifying either.
No. I mean, he didn't make it out of Q1. He was started, 16th on the grid?
Yeah. Made up 11 positions and ended up P5.
Yeah, so impressive. I think being a rookie and just finishing this race, given the positions, is, like, incredibly impressive in itself. Just finishing the race. But the fact that he finished P4, I'm like, wow, is he that guy? Is he him? I don't know. We'll see what he's like racing in.
Oh, right, P4. Sorry. Normal conditions. Because P4, and then they said that.
Yeah, he was P4, and then it was a 5-second penalty, and then the stewards reversed the decision, and then he got promoted back to P4.
Because that's what a good team principal does. Argues for you, guys.
Yeah.
Team principals, part of their resume is whinging, but specifically whinging to the FIA, and you have to be really good at it. And they did. They did an incredible job. They got that position back for him. Sorry. Yes. P4.
What a finish for Mercedes. A 3-4 finish. Like, I think Toto Wolff, like, couldn't ask for anything better, given how dominant the McLaren is.
It's wild that we're not talking about it more. When Antonelli had clean air, he was close to pace with George Russell.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe we're not talking about it because they won the boring way. George Russell and Kimi Antonelli put their heads down. They ran the car clean. They did their darnest. They didn't run anyone off track. They didn't run themselves off track. They didn't dive bomb anybody. They didn't have to do no crazy pit incidents, Mercedes. It was just German perfection. And everyone's like, this is a snooze fest. I want to talk about how, like, the Norris and the gravel and Verstappen and, like, all these other people. It's like, we're not talking about Mercedes and Kimi Antonelli and George Russell enough. Like, that was a great race from them.
Right. And if Mercedes continues to collect P3s, P4s like this throughout the rest of the season, I know we've only had one season, but, like, are they in the running for the constructors?
Consistency wins championships. If Mercedes just keeps doing this quietly, I'm going to say it's like a Chase Elliott thing, but then people don't understand my NASCAR reference. It's going to be like, if they keep doing this quote-unquote boringly when no one talks about it, at the end of the year when they do really well, people are going to be like, wow, I didn't see this coming.
Yeah.
You know? Because no one wants to talk about the boring people who win the race the normal way.
It's winning in a fashion where you're just consistent and it's not sexy and it's not, like, flashy. It's like being the San Antonio Spurs of Formula One or the Bayern Munich of Formula One.
Yeah, totally. I love San Antonio. It's my favorite place to vacation. Behrman, also the only other rookie who finished. Crashed in practice, suffered gearbox failure in qualifying. Mm-hmm. He was dead last in 14th, luckily, because everyone else DNF'd. But Ocon was just ahead of him So.
Yeah, the Haas has really struggled, both in quali and in the race.
It was really frustrating to see that.
I don't know if it has to do with their rain setup or their wet weather setup or whether there's genuinely something wrong with the car, but like they seem to be on their own island of crap during the entire race weekend.
Yeah, I really thought since they were scoring points towards the end of last year a little bit more consistently, and then they also had that partnership officially with Toyota Gazoo Racing, and they did mm-hmm. have a lot of engineering and staff changes internally and then hired new people. I know a lot of people are wearing multiple hats as well, so they might be just kind of strained on resources, people, strategy, sure. engineering-wise as well. And I think that might come out a little bit in Australia. I don't know how much is actually right. I wasn't there. I don't know. Yeah. So hopefully they were just ironing out the kinks here for this race. You can see their post-race report is like, this was a data collection race. We had car issues all week. We're not good. We were just happy to make it home and clean. And data collection, that's all we need to move forward. And I was like, interesting.
I wonder if this also is a commentary on what good feedback Hulkenberg and Magnussen gave them in the car last season because they were such experienced drivers. I know Ocon's experience, but... Mm-hmm. I don't know what his reputation is when it comes to feedback with the team and the engineers. But then you have Ollie Bearman, who may not have that part of his driver toolkit fully refined. Mm-hmm. And maybe Haas isn't getting the feedback they need to produce a car that can compete in the midfield.
I mean, the best way to see that is see their runs and compare them to the year before and see how much better they do, right? Mm-hmm. I would definitely hold on to that thought as something to watch for as the races progress and see if what changes are made, what the drivers are saying on their radio, and how they're implemented for the next race, if they're implemented at all. That's something yeah. definitely to denote. It's a good shout.
Yeah, for sure. Moving on next, Ferrari gave us some comedy over the course of this race, eh?
This was like a hard one to talk about because it was just like so much potential.
Yeah.
They should have not ended up where they ended up.
Agreed.
It was highly frustrating. The Ferrari strategists seemed confused about timing and intensity of the rain. So the tire strategy was just not good.
Yeah.
I really want to talk about the race radio. And shout out to Multiviewer for F1 because you can rewatch this stuff, which I was doing to take my notes afterwards.
Yeah.
So... they told Lewis Hamilton, short, heavy rain, only lasting 2 laps. He's on hearts, okay? And then they're like, you're going to stay out. It's not that bad.
Is this the point of the race when he was leading?
He's about to lead.
Okay, got it.
So then, because everyone's jumping into pit for intermediates, so they're like, stay out, etc. So everyone's jumping into pit for intermediates. He's out. He's like out there still. He's climbing up the leaderboard. We tasted that P1 for a second. I was like, so thrilled. Yes. I was so overly delusional.
We were all like, we are so back.
And then he goes, is more rain coming? And his race engineer goes, no. Oh, he goes, negative. Hopefully. Let's see. And I was like, I'm sorry, what? And then Lewis Hamilton's like, we should have pitted. And like, I'm not doing well. I'm slippery all over the place. And they're like, oh, it's yep. only going to last. And they're trying to convince him that it's only going to last just like a smidge longer. And he's like,
they're gaslighting him.
And then he's like, we're coming in. And they're like, okay, if you want to come in, you let us know. And I was like, what is happening here? Everyone has access to the same weather radar data. Which one are you reading?
Ugh, man.
They did the same thing. But Charles Leclerc, by the way, succumbed to the same exact issue where they're like, oh, yeah, you can just stay out. It's fine. On your hearts. While it's just... blasting down with rain. I just love that it's like, is more rain coming? They're like, no, hopefully. Let's see. Let's just find out. You're going to be fine in slicks out there.
What a non-answer.
You?
Yeah.
It's just, what are we doing?
I don't know.
I don't know. You tell me. It was so, they were so convinced that it wasn't going to rain badly. Meanwhile, everyone else on their radio was like, hard rain, next 6 minutes, we have to switch to intermediates. Meanwhile, Ferrari's like, you can stay out. It's fine. And I was like, what is this discrepancy?
Maybe.
Yeah, and I know this has been a long-running joke for the past few decades about Ferrari's strategy, but for me, sure. this is definitely highlighted in the post-Schumacher and the Ross Brawn Ferrari strategist era.
Yeah,
Ferrari is afraid to make bold calls. They play a lot of follow the leader, so a lot of their actions are reactionary instead of proactive. Mm-hmm. They're like, let's just see, what's everyone else doing on pit lane? It's fine.
Yeah.
And then like they jump in, and then it's too late.
Instead of having a clear strategy, they're like, we're just going to vibe it out.
Yeah. Another interesting thing is they're trying to tell Big Lou how to drive on the radio. They're like, yeah, oh, just press this button. He's like, no, I'm aware. I'm just not close enough. Otherwise, I would use it. Like, what are we, like, why are you coaching him right now?
I don't know. I do not understand how Lewis Hamilton was able to maintain the level of professionalism he did on the radio when talking to Ricardo Adami, because he clearly was very frustrated. Ricardo Adami was talking way too much to him. He was also like trying to like mansplain like the race and the steering wheel to him. And like, I'm sure he just wanted to be like, dude, shut the fuck up. I'm trying to drive.
But he can't say that, yeah. Unfortunately, unless you're Max Verstappen and you get away with it. It's just, right. And then the Leclerc seat full of water radio, where he's like, God, oh, my seat's full of water. So and then Brian Rossi says, it must be water. So Leclerc says, let's add that to the words of wisdom.
Yeah.
That's what Lewis Hamilton has to learn. Like those little like snips. It's like, oh, wow. So helpful. Thank you so much.
So apparently to say shut up in Italian, it's stai zitto.
Yeah, but you got to be polite about it. You can't be mean.
Yeah. Yeah. But that moment with the seat full of water with Brian Bozzi was so funny because clearly he was talking about the connection to his water bottle must have come loose. So it was leaking. And so he probably had water sloshing around in the seat. And I'm sure Brian Bozzi meant to say, oh, it must be from your drink. Mm-hmm. But instead he just said, that must be the water. My seat is full of water. That must be the water.
It was really unfortunate. Yeah. At some point, like, yeah, oh, there might be rules. They have to communicate in English over the official radio. Isn't that it?
Yes.
Yeah. It's unfortunate. I was like, it's definitely when I talk to my mom, I switch between Polish and English. Because it's just, mm-hmm. I just know for her, there's some words that just make, it's just easier if I say it in Polish. Right. It's just, and then she'll respond to me in Polish, and it just be this whole back and forth thing.
Sure.
But yeah, I guess you do have to, it's official, you do have to do the English. It's unfortunate. I was like, can you just switch back and forth, like me and my mom do, and just call it fine.
Yeah, can you say it, and then as long as you translate it in English, eventually you can still use the native tongue?
Just say it in both. Yeah. Just so everyone just understands what you're trying to say. The FIA and Charles Leclerc. Yeah, really unfortunate to Ferrari, and I don't know how they fix this, right? I was hoping Fred Vasseur would change things around. I mean, still, yeah. I guess we can say pretty young in his tenure, and having that accountability from him. Yeah. I know the Italian media are going to hold him accountable. I
know you don't like to speak in ifs. I know you don't like to speak in hypotheticals, but like, let's say Ferrari was the first to switch over to inters in that part of the race. Where do you think Hamilton and Leclerc would have finished?
If they were the first ones to jump on it, I mean, along with everyone else when they did.
Yeah.
They could have gone in at least a P4, P5. They could have stayed up where they...
Yeah.
I just think they threw that away.
Yeah, and I think they would have, and I think given the circumstances, they would have been happy with a P4, P5.
Yeah, but I agree. The most egregious thing, though, was Racing Bulls and Yuki Tsunoda and their strategy and failure to launch. Because that radio is also insane. Because they knew the rain was coming, and they still fucked up.
Yeah,
I don't know how they did that. I don't know if his race strategist was distracted or not. At least in Ferrari, they're clearly looking at either raw data and not adapting to real-time situations of some kind. So they're like, oh, yeah, you're fine. So to me, it's like, oh, you're at least looking at stuff and you think you're making an educated decision. And VCarb was straight up just miscommunication galore. They cost Yuki at minimum a P5, if not more, because he was doing incredibly well beforehand. So, yeah, they knew it was coming. They said it was heavy and it would last a long time. Wait, I wrote this down somewhere. Please hold. There you go. 50 minutes away. We'll last 6 minutes. It's quite heavy. And that's about an hour 28:30 into his radio. Mm-hmm. When he's on mediums, before the green flag goes, he goes, we don't want to manage on these tires. We expect rain coming. So when we restart, use the tire. As in, treat these mediums like they're softs. You go for it. You were racing in these mediums. We're going to switch to intermediates later. These don't need to last till the end of the race. They don't need to last 24 or 22 laps. Like, go for it. Use up these mediums. And you're like, great. That's awesome. Right when it was getting really bad, he passes the paddock in the pits. And they're like, box. And Yuki goes, it's too late to tell me that. You see, like, you can watch this race. Like, you can watch the race replay. He's speeding down.
It's like your friend who's supposed to be giving you directions in the front seat. And they and they're like, oh, you were supposed to turn back there because they were like distracted on their phone.
I don't know what was happening. They're like, oh, pit, pit. And he's like, it's too late. I've missed it completely. Like, I can't even like jerk the wheel to like try to make it. Like, he was two walls on both sides. He was not going in.
It's like, hey, you missed a turn back there. He's like, you didn't tell me. He's like, yeah, sorry, I was playing Candy Crush.
Yeah. And during that lap, they then told him, they confirmed with him that he's going to pit. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, cool. And then they tell him that he's not going to pit. They say, no, don't do it. But while they're doing that, to stay out, he's in the gravel. They're like, yeah, stay out. It's going to be dry. And he's in the gravel trying to control this car. He had so many great saves on his onboard. That one gravel thing. And then, but like the rest of it, he's slipping and sliding. It is insane how much he's doing. And then they decide in that same lap to come back in.
Oh my gosh.
And I was like, what are we doing here? They pitted at least three laps after the top seven pitted.
Woof.
It's the same thing to a Ferrari. It was about three or four laps. So,
yeah.
Yeah, they had the same issues. It was a miscommunication on their part. Because one, they should have told him the pit when he was driving by the pit box a lot earlier. So then that's definitely on V-Carb. That's not on Yuki.
Yeah.
Unless, I guess, you could be aggressive, but if your team's not ready to pit, then you would just come in and look like a doofus. So we go back and forth on whose fault that is, right? And then to say to, yes, you are pitting. Never mind, don't pit. Never mind, do pit. It's just like, what are we... Leave my boy Yuki alone. This is another pattern that V-Carb does constantly, is screwing up strategy.
Yeah.
A lot of people were asking, why didn't they just like stay out on inters or pit even earlier for inters? And like at that point, you don't want to...
Well, if you have a dry racing line...
Yeah, you're losing 10 to 15 seconds.
The enters don't have... Yeah, the enters are much slower, and they don't last as long. Like, I believe there were points in the race where cars that were on enters were having to go off the racing line to cool them down.
Oh, right? Yeah, Max was doing that a lot, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they couldn't have done that. And also, you'll just have to... And then in addition to people saying, oh, they should have just pit for enters... and. People saying, yeah, because that would have cost you 10 to 15 seconds because it is inters on a dry line is absolutely a wild thing to do. But then you're wondering, okay, well, if everyone else pits then for inters and you're already on inters, do you make up that time? And the answer is no. Mm-hmm. It is absolutely just like a sweet spot that you have to hit when everyone else pits in the exact lap when that crossover happens, right? It's who's on the right part of the track at the right time to peel off into the pits before it gets too bad and do that. And that's what everyone was kind of fighting. Honestly, but straight up for Yuki Tsunoda, they did not communicate with him well at all. The whole thing of telling him to stay out while he's in the gravel, it just gets me. That's just like perfect comedic timing. I was like, there's no way you guys did this to him.
It's like that scene from, you ever seen the movie from the 1960s Grand Prix? It'd be like James Garner in the water and on the radio, they're like, stay out.
Yeah. It's fine. The dry line's forming. You'll be great. Some other notable things that, we got to compliment Williams, right? They look strong.
Yep.
Alex Albon did an incredible jump. He sounded super confident before the race, but he also sounded super confident after the race, saying that they talked about being more proactive. Speaking of being proactive, they talked about being more proactive and strategy-wise. And that everything just clicked together because usually it's hard on the first race for everything to flow so well. And he said that Williams has like kind of locked it down for Australia, and he was really impressed by everyone. He was really complimentary of everything and everyone, which I just loved from Alex that he's so a humble king.
It felt like a love fest both between him and Carlos, even though Carlos, you know, crashed out on the first lap. How involved, like we said earlier, he was in helping with the race strategy for Albon to finish the race.
Yeah, they're talking about it afterwards, and they're like, yeah, Carlos Sainz was looking around. He's like, yeah, you're going to have the pit for intermediates immediately. He's like, this is going to be bad.
Yeah, he said something along the lines of, like, he's not going to be able to make those corners if he stays on these tires.
Maybe we see Carlos Sainz a future team principal. That'd be sick, actually.
Love to see it.
And then when people complain about him being a team principal, I was like, oh, I remember when he was a racer.
Yeah.
Gatekeep people that way. Fernando Alonso, we mentioned that turn six crash during the race. He blamed the accident on the reworked corner. That he called a danger because there was a curb and then gravel, and a lot of gravel kept coming up to the curb. And there's a video circulating of Pierre Gasly dipping his tire in there and kicking up so much gravel onto the track, and then Fernando Alonso has to drive over it. it was just a highly unfortunate timing for Fernando as he was chasing down Pierre Gasly at those last moments.
I will say that turn six was a tough part of the track for most of the drivers, even in normal dry conditions. Because if you go back and you watch the practice highlights, most cars were struggling not to dip their car into the gravel there. Like, so even in perfect conditions, that was a really challenging spot for most cars, most drivers.
I want everyone to know, as James is saying this, I think he's in front of a window.
And I am. The sun just came out.
And the sun just came out. And as he's saying this momentous line, it's just like God is agreeing with James and just 100%. Illuminating him.
I just lowered it.
Oh, no. We love the sun in your face.
No, now I can't. Okay, I can't see with the sun in my eyes. But yeah, I think that that turn probably does need to be reevaluated, because I think even in practice, almost all cars were struggling not to dip their toe into that gravel and spray it everywhere. So...
And that's where, what's that dude's name that I just praised a lot? Lando Norris said that he made the mistake where Max was able to catch him up with the DRS within the final couple laps there. So definitely something to rework again, because they switched it previously. So time to double check that one more time.
Yeah.
Funny enough, Lance Stroll did really well, a P6.
Quiet Lance Stroll getting P6.
No. Straight up, post-race, he said, they called me in. I had nothing to do with it. It was all strategy. It was all just pitting at the right time for inners. Aston Martin knew, called them in, kept going. And at some point, I mean, this is an interesting discussion, right? Like, did he have a great race? People are going to be like, no, it's Lance Stroll, blah, 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 blah. But it's just keeping the car clean and not crashing it. And you end up P6. You end up in the points. It is what it is.
Lance Stroll gets a lot of hate. Lance Stroll is a good enough driver to be in Formula One and collect points. I don't. He's a good enough driver to stay in F1 for a couple seasons. He's not a good enough driver to stay in F1 for a decade.
I'm just more confused. I don't know if you were listening to the international feed or the F1 TV feed. I forgot which one I was listening to.
I was watching the race on the Sky Sports. I usually watch on F1 TV, but I was watching with my wife. So we were in the living room and I was watching on ESPN, which is a Sky Sports broadcast.
Okay, you let me know if they did this to you as well. I was also reading an article. They also said this. They keep calling Lance Stroll a wet weather specialist.
I don't know if that's true.
And I just don't know why everyone keeps pushing this, because they keep talking about it.
Why can you say that given that he beached himself in Sao Paulo last year?
Right. So the examples they use are the 27 Italian Grand Prix and the 2020 Turkish Grand Prix, which, by the way, were qualifying runs, and that he did very well. And I was like, okay, interesting. Yeah. I still think there's some variables there that we didn't look into. And then the 2019 German Grand Prix, but they made a decision to switch to slick tires as it began to dry. So it was the other way, right? This race for Australia, Aston Martin pitted him to switch for intermediates correctly. Mm-hmm. In 2019, it was to switch to slicks at the correct time, right as the track was drying, and it got him up to fourth. So but then we have, of course, Brazil.
Yeah.
So most recently Brazil, and the other most recent examples they showed was a qualifying run in 2020, which was 5 years ago. And I was like, there's been so many wet weather races in between, and you've had no other examples besides the most recent one being 2020.
I would not be surprised if it's media outlets who are trying to glaze Aston Martin a little bit to get access.
That's so interesting.
That's just like me wearing a tinfoil hat.
Well, we don't gotta worry about that. They ain't giving a shit. Anyway, I don't believe the wet weather specialist thing. The thing also is, if you're good in wet weather, it doesn't mean you're a wet weather specialist. We have to start redefining these terms. Of like, you're just a good racer, or like a decent racer, right?
Yeah.
People who are wet weather specialists, I'm thinking, again, Lewis Hamilton, Max Verstappen, those who could be P7 in the wet and then drive through the wet weather line, or excuse me, the wet line, to pass people in puddles, in pools, on really bad intermediate tires, on wet tires, and they're just moving up into the podium position. Those are wet weather specialists.
Sure.
You keeping the car clean, it just happens to be in a
yeah, this car. Lance Stroll wasn't doing the art of racing in the rain here.
He's keeping it clean, which is what you asked for from your driver. Aston Martin called him in at the right time. And I love that he said, I had nothing to do with it. I'm like, you know what? I respect that, Lance.
You know what? What a humble king.
How humble. He's trying to get Aston Martin's good graces.
You heard it here first. It's going to be a WTF1 headline. James Coker calls Lance Stroll a humble king.
Oh, no. What if it's going to be a wet weather specialist, humble king, Lance Stroll, kind of on the F1 team? kind of situation. The last team I kind of want to talk about is Haas. What the Haas yeah. doing? What the dog doing? What the Haas doing? Yeah, we talked about it a little bit. They said it was all their team changes, data collection, gear issues. It was just so frustrating that they had the opportunity to pit. They unlapped themselves, and then they decided to pit, and then they had to unlap themselves again, causing the safety car to stay out.
Yeah.
And like Ollie Bammer almost like crashed in the Max coming out of the pits. I was like, what is this decision making? You could have just played around with it a little bit. You're already last. You had nothing to lose. You could have just done different things, tried different stuff, and gone from there. But hopefully they're just ironing out everything and all the kinks and brushing that dust off.
Yeah. But overall, I very much enjoyed this race. I don't know how I was devastated for Hadjar and Doohan and some of the other drivers who weren't able to finish or start. But I thought it was very exciting.
It was interesting. I'm interested to see for China. Someone did ask me if everyone's going to keep up their paces and stuff, and the answer is they could, like, right? But it's a completely different track, right? This is a...
And it's a sprint weekend, so it's a
sprint
different...
Sprint weekend, yeah. So sprint weekend, it's also a permanent track, one of the longest straights that Formula One has on the calendar. Heavy braking zones, high tire wear. You also just different aerodynamics. You want to reduce the downforce, improve that straight line speed. You want to have different suspension and ride height than you did in Australia. So it's going to be a lot different than Australia. So it'll be interesting to see who is, and this is a mark of a good racer, right? You're good on all kinds of courses, all kinds of tracks, et cetera. So it'll be interesting to see what they engineer and what the drivers can bring. I did have some graphics complaints, but I don't know if we have time for that.
Let's talk about it.
Yeah, I understand. I think this is a tag. How do you say their name?
Tagoya.
I know this is a tag.
You can say it however you want, but I think it's Tagoya.
Okay, we'll practice that offline. This is
you can say tag.
I'm just going to say tag.
Do it.
T-A-G. They, and on the live timing, they make the number one red the entire race. And I understand that it's, I just visually got annoyed by that. Exclamation marks weren't my favorite. I could live with that though. Whatever. I guess I appreciate to see who's under investigation or not. Not a big deal.
I like that. But it gave Mario Kart vibes to me. But yeah, I also didn't love the purple Louis Vuitton branding everywhere. That was...
Oh my God. It was so tacky. I don't know who listens to this. But if you're in the United States, you know every sorority wannabe rich person... Sorry, sorority girl / wannabe rich person buys Louis Vuitton Neverfull bags and has like their logos everywhere and stuff. It just came off so tacky to me.
But I feel like Louis Vuitton is like a very classy brand, and like the traditional color scheme of Louis Vuitton is like, you know, the brown with like the tan LV on it. And like, why are we deviating from that and making it look like a Crown Royal bag?
Yeah, it was, you know what, good for those people who want to be in the F1 paddock with their Neverfulls and stuff like that. Just whatever.
Jenny and I were both commenting out. We're like, it kind of looks trashy. And LVMH is a very classy brand. It is, you know, one of the largest luxury conglomerates in the world.
Luxury brands are ones that we don't know about because we're still too poor to afford them. It's rich people who don't wear labels and they just buy really high quality stuff, unfortunately.
Totally.
This is something, the purple was an interesting choice. They get their money. They get their sponsorship. Good for them. Like, I can live with it. What was frustrating is it took 28 laps for any, like, timing differential to show up. And they didn't have any pit stop timings. And I was like, all you had to do was Control-C, Control-V from last year. What happened?
Yeah, they changed also, like, the leaderboard graphics as well, which I don't love. I like the ones from last year more.
Oh, with the angel and devil on their shoulders?
When they did the podiums or whoever topped out the practice times, it was like it's like the angel devil on the shoulder situation. I didn't love that. But whatever, you know, I guess it's good to change and evolve, and maybe they'll find something that's better.
Fun fact, in corporate America, at least, there's a position called change management manager, which is what I do. Because people hate change so much. So they call me in, and I hold your hand and guide you through a new software, a new leader, and just making sure everyone's okay. I'm like a corporate America special, like, therapist.
You're a professional handholder.
A professional handholder. Be like, everyone, we're switching to Jira. It's going to be okay.
Oh, man. We're switching from right now Concur to Workday for expenses.
Ooh, interesting. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't really like Concur, so I'm happy for anything else. We used to use Concur for travel, don't use it anymore. We now use Navan, which I prefer.
Cause I haven't used that one yet. We use Concur for travel, but for expenses, we use Workday.
Yeah, so I'm embracing this change.
Oh, nice. Okay, so you're one of the there's different audiences when it comes to change, but we are unfortunately not one of them. Yeah, graphics. I know. I will live with it. I will deal with it. Yeah. I just wanted to throw it out there that if anyone else hates them, you're not alone.
By the way, I want to talk about graphics real quick. This is not related to Formula One, but IndyCar was having some issue with the Fox broadcast because Fox was putting graphics over the halo of the IndyCar, like where the aero screen is, mm-hmm. and there's valuable sponsors there that were being covered up by the graphics.
Oh, they got in trouble?
Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
You know, people were paying a lot of money to have those sponsors there.
Yeah, but Formula One does the same onboard cams. Or do they do it above the halo so the sponsors don't
They never have graphics blocking the sponsors on the halo.
Oh, wow. That's a good
F1
show.
Race.
Fox a lot to learn.
Yeah. I would give the Australian Grand Prix a 7.5 out of 10.
Yeah, I'd say 7 out of 10.
Right on. Y'all, thank you so much for tuning in. This is the WTF1 Podcast. I'm your host, James Coker, along with Ash Vandelay. We will be back later this week to preview the Chinese Grand Prix. It will be a sprint weekend at the Shanghai International Circuit. Please tune in. Please make sure to like and subscribe. Leave a comment wherever you listen to podcasts. And we will see you later this week.
Bye.
Bye.